Hi guys, my name is Jason and this is Investing Australia. This is a brand new show where I'll be talking to you about everything to do with money, everything to do with investing, everything to do with superannuation, with cash flow, with cryptocurrency, with tax, basically anything that will help you manage your money better, become more financially literate, understand exactly what it is that you're trying to do, and basically help you live the life you want to live. Because at the end of the day, that is the whole point of money. The whole point of money is to be able to pay for the stuff that you want to do in your life. And so my job here is to not provide financial advice. That's not what I'm here to do. But what I am going to try and offer is information, education, some threads to pull on, some ideas for you to consider to be able to do your own research and make better financial decisions. Now, this is the very first episode of the show, so I really appreciate you clicking on the little icon, giving me a go, having a listen, and I really encourage you to stick around. Every week, I'm going to be covering different topics, different ideas, different things that are in the news, different changes that are happening, different rules that are coming in place, different financial topics that will provide you with some value. Now, the one I want to talk about today is cryptocurrency, but specifically the tax on cryptocurrency, because this is an issue that I am seeing a lot more of on places like Reddit, on Facebook groups, on just general social media. I'm seeing a lot more people, well, let's be honest, cryptocurrency is becoming more mainstream. More people are investing in it. More Aussies are getting involved. There are new platforms available that make it very, very easy to invest in crypto. And it is going to be throwing up some issues, especially with some of these meme coins that are going through the absolute roof, making people a lot of money in a very short space of time. One part of that that often gets lost in the shuffle is that the ATO is going to get their cut. There is going to be tax to pay. At the end of the day, cryptocurrency is classed by the Australian Tax Office as an investment. And if you make money on an investment, you don't get to keep all of it. Now, there are things you can do to try and minimize your tax, but you know, broadly speaking, if you are making a shed load of money on different investments, there will be some capital gains tax to pay. Now, this is more complicated. This is more complicated with cryptocurrency. And today I want to explain, or talk through that issue a little bit, explain what my thoughts on it are and some of the key areas to be aware of and key things to consider if you are someone who invests in cryptocurrency, and especially if you are someone who invests or who trades a lot of cryptocurrency. And the second thing that I want to have a bit of a talk about today is an age-old dilemma and something that many people will be considering, many of you guys will be considering. If you have some spare cash or some spare cash flow, should I invest that surplus into mainstream investments, into my superannuation, the share market, or should I pay more off my mortgage? And I'm going to explain my thoughts on this issue and go through the pros and cons of each option. Now, who am I to tell you what you should be doing with your money? Well, number one, I'm not telling you what to do with your money. At the end of the day, all of this stuff is about personal choice. All you can do really is get as much information as you can to make your own informed decisions. I am a financial planner. So in my day job, that is what I do. I provide financial advice to clients every single day. As I said, that's not what this is about. I don't know you. I don't know your circumstances. So I don't know whether the stuff that I'm talking about is even relevant to your financial situation. But, you know, I have been working as a financial planner for years and years and years and years. I've got lots of qualifications and bits of paper that say that I know what I'm doing. But at the end of the day, I am just a random person on the internet. So make sure you take what I say with a grain of salt, just like you should do that with every person that you get information from online. So with that said, let's get into today's episode. So the first thing I want to talk about is capital gains tax, and specifically capital gains tax as it applies to cryptocurrency. Now, firstly, let's just look at capital gains tax more broadly speaking. So broadly speaking, you may know this already, but effectively, capital gains tax is just the tax that is due when you make money on an investment. So whether that is a investment property, whether that's the share market, whether that's bond investments that you've got, regardless of effectively the type of investment, not regardless, there are some exceptions, but broadly speaking, whenever you make money on an investment asset, you will have to pay tax on that. And cryptocurrency is no different. The ATO, The Australian Tax Office has classed cryptocurrency as an investment, and if it goes up in value and you sell it, you will pay some tax on that. So let's look at a hypothetical example. If you, very simple, very straightforward, if you bought Bitcoin at $10,000 US and you sold it today, you'd be realizing around $50,000. You would pay tax on that $50,000. That $50,000 would be added to your income tax bands for the year, and you would pay tax on it based on your income tax rates. Now, if you've held that Bitcoin for longer than a year, you would get a 50% discount on that gain. So you wouldn't pay tax on a gain of $50,000. You pay tax on a gain of $25,000. So that's to encourage people to hold assets for a longer period of time. If you bought and sold that in a shorter time period than 12 months, you'd pay tax on the full amount. Now, the reason why, you know, that's pretty straightforward, right? And for most people who are interested in money, interested in investing, you'll understand the basics of how capital gains tax works. The reason why it's more complicated when it comes to crypto is because it is very, very, very common to make transactions to sell investments to realize gains, but not actually transfer those gains back into Aussie dollars. So, you know, imagine if you're trading some of the very small, well, not so small cap anymore, but some of the meme coins that have been around lately, Dogecoin, Shiba Inu, SafeMoon, all these stupid cryptocurrencies. Don't flame me, they are stupid. Anyway, you wouldn't necessarily be buying and selling those in Aussie dollar pairs. So quite often you will be buying, let's use Shiba Inu as an example. You'll be buying Shiba Inu with Bitcoin or with Ethereum or with Tether, with USDT. You won't actually be buying them directly with Aussie dollars. So when you go to sell those, because you're not selling them to Aussie dollars, you're still realizing a CGT event, but you don't actually have a figure that is in Australian dollars. So for example, let's say you bought some Shiba Inu, right? So first things first, you'd have to convert your Aussie dollars into a currency that trades with Shiba Inu. So maybe that's Bitcoin. So you buy some Bitcoin, you then sell the Bitcoin to buy Shiba Inu, because that's what a trade is. You sell one, buy another. So potentially you've realized the gain or a loss just straight away because you've sold that Bitcoin for less or more than what you bought it for with Aussie dollars. You hold that Shiba Inu for a while, you make some money, that's great. When you go to sell that, if you want to withdraw that money to your bank account, you don't generally, I've not seen it anywhere. There may be an app that does it, but I've not seen a trading pair of Shiba Inu to Aussie dollars. So you can't just sell that Shiba Inu, take your profit in Aussie dollars, bank it, keep some aside for the tax. Generally speaking, what will happen is you will make a trade from Shiba Inu to, say, Bitcoin. That has realized the gain there because you bought the Shiba Inu for less Bitcoin than what you sold it for. So you've realized the gain is in Bitcoin. But then to actually work out the tax that you need to pay to the ATO, you need to convert those figures to Aussie dollars at the time of those transactions. So every time you make a transaction, you effectively need to have a figure of what the Aussie dollar equivalent was at that time. Because at the end of the day, when you get to the end of the tax year and the ATO is asking you to complete your tax return and you need to put your capital gains on there, they don't want to know your gain in terms of Bitcoin. They want to know what gain you've made in Aussie dollars because that's what they expect you to pay your tax in. Now, this is not necessarily a massive problem if you are somebody who is a hodler. If you buy some Bitcoin, you just add a bit of extra money to it every pay cycle, every couple times a year, and you're not selling any, you're really keen long term, that's not really a problem for you because you're not actually selling it to realize any capital gains. Where there is a potential problem with this is if you are someone who sits there on their app of their phone, trades 30 times a day on a Sunday, maybe that ranks up to 100, 120 times a day because it's just fun. It's like a bit of a gambling type of habit sort of thing that you do and you trade a lot. Technically speaking, you should be keeping track of all of those transactions in order to work out your tax position properly. Now, there are services out there that will aggregate this stuff for you. For Ethereum-based transactions, they're on the blockchain, so you can always access the full rundown of it. But it's not easy. It's not straightforward. It requires some technical savvy. A lot of the services that are out there will obviously charge you a fee for that. But it's just something to be aware of, because a lot of people don't realize that you are supposed to pay CGT whenever you dispose of an asset, and that's regardless of what you've disposed of it to. So, you know, it would be the same as if you bought a rental property, and it doubled in value. To, let's say you bought it for 250 grand, it goes up to 500 grand, right? Let's say someone comes along to that home open, you put it on the market, someone comes along to that home open and they roll up in a brand new Ferrari. And with the car shortages we got at the moment, Ferraris are hard to come by. Maybe they say to you, look, I don't have the cash, I don't have the liquid cash to give you $500,000 for this house, but I will give you this Ferrari. And maybe you have a look at it and the Ferrari's market value at the moment is like 575K or whatever. I mean, this is a stupid scenario. It's not going to happen. But let's just say, for argument's sake, you might say, okay, fine, I will do a straight swap with you, my house, for your Ferrari. Now, you still, if that's an investment property, you still need to pay capital gains tax on that, because you've disposed of that asset for significantly more than what you bought it for, and you've received compensation for that, for that transfer. So even though that your compensation has come in the form of a Ferrari, you have still been paid in some way for your asset. And cryptocurrency is exactly the same. You know, if Bitcoin is the house and Ethereum is the Ferrari, that's a transfer of assets, one for the other. It's not a transfer into Aussie dollars, but it is still a transfer. And cryptocurrency works in exactly the same way. Now, there's an added wrinkle with this, because if you are into crypto, you will have heard of staking, which is basically when you lock away some of your cryptocurrency in return for some interest. Now, the interest comes in the form of additional tokens in whatever token you are staking. So, let's say, just use a really simple example. Let's say Ethereum, you're staking Ethereum. The interest that is paid on that, maybe you're doing it, let's say you put it away for 6 months, the interest that you're receiving on that Ethereum comes in the form of Ethereum. So you don't just get extra Aussie dollars trickled into your account, you get Ethereum trickled into your account. Now, where this gets complicated is when that interest is paid, when those staking rewards are paid, the ATO classes that as income. So if you, over the course of a year, receive $10,000 worth of additional Ethereum from staking, then you need to pay income tax on that $10,000 worth of Ethereum. And again, the actual amount is dependent on what the market value was of Ethereum at the time you received it. So if you're receiving it on a monthly basis, the amount in Aussie dollar terms is going to be slightly different depending on how much Ethereum is worth the day you are paid, the time you are paid. Now, where this gets really complicated is because cryptocurrency can be so volatile, you could end up in a scenario where you need to pay tax on an asset that's actually worth zero. So this is not probably likely to happen with one of the big cryptocurrencies like Ethereum or Bitcoin or whatever, but just for argument's sake, let's consider if you are investing in, let's use something more stupid like SafeMoon, right? Now, I don't even know if you can stake SafeMoon or whatever, but let's just, for argument's sake, let's say you stake SafeMoon, you've got $10,000 worth of SafeMoon and you stake that and you earn that 10% is the staking percentage that you receive from that. So if you stake your SafeMoon for a year, and let's just, for argument's sake, say that the price stays the same in Aussie dollar terms, you'll receive 1,000 Aussie dollars worth of additional SafeMoon over the course of that 12 months. Now, you've received that as income, so you need to then pay income tax on that $1,000, and you need to pay that obviously in Aussie dollars. Now, you could have a really crazy situation where, let's say you stake that 10,000. For the plan is to stake it for a year. The first 6 months, price doesn't move much. You get you get your 500 over the course of the first 6 months. You've got $500 worth of SafeMoon. So remember, it's in SafeMoon. You've not converted that to Aussie dollars. It's still sitting there in SafeMoon, but your balance has gone up by 500 Aussie dollars roughly worth of SafeMoon. Now, after that 6 months, SafeMoon, let's say hypothetically, goes to zero. I say hypothetically with something like that. It could definitely happen. There's a rug, it goes to zero. You don't have anything. All of your SafeMoon is worth nothing. However, you have still received that 500 Aussie dollars worth of SafeMoon in the first 6 months of the year. But you received it in SafeMoon, which is now worth nothing. So actually, you could hypothetically be in a scenario where you've received these staking rewards in a cryptocurrency, and you no longer, once it goes to zero, that cryptocurrency is worth nothing, but yet the Australian Tax Office is still going to want to charge you income tax on that $500 worth that you received in the first 6 months of the year. Now, really the point with this is just that, you know, there are all these sorts of scenarios that can play out, but it's just important to keep in mind that it is a complex area. Just because, you know, cryptocurrency is still quite Wild West, it's still quite unregulated. The ATO is not. The ATO still wants to get their cut. The ATO still looks at this as an investment asset, and it is something that you should make sure you're taking decent records, or at least hooked up with a service that can do that for you, because the last thing you want to do is make a big chunk of money from crypto and then have the ATO come knocking and cause you an absolute headache because you don't actually know how much you've made and therefore how much tax you need to pay them. And the next thing I want to have a talk about is the age-old dilemma of paying off your mortgage versus investing. Now, this, at the end of the day, this is a very pretty straightforward question to answer. And it does get a little bit more complicated than the way I'm going to explain it. But, you know, for argument's sake, when you are looking at this issue, the way I like to think of it is using the saying that a dollar saved is a dollar earned. So what I mean by that is that, you know, let's say you've received a pay rise from work and you're going to end up with an extra $1,000 every month cash in hand, or money in the hand. So your every month your pay packet is $1,000 better off to you after tax. You're $1,000 a month better off, right? You got $1,000 a month more that you can spend on the things that you want to spend that money on. Now, on the other hand, let's have a look at an example where you have a car repayment. Car's still fine, don't need a new car, it's running well. You've been paying off that car for a few years. You've now finished with that car repayment. You don't need to pay that anymore. And that car repayment was $1,000 a month as well. You don't need to pay that, and therefore you are still $1,000 a month better off. So it doesn't really matter whether you're earning an extra $1,000 a month or saving $1,000 a month somewhere. You are better off financially in the same way, whether you save that money or earn more money. And when we are looking at comparing a mortgage to comparing an investment portfolio, putting money in investments, it's basically the same thing. So the first thing you need to consider is the interest rate you're paying on your mortgage and whether it's realistic to achieve a better rate of return from an investment portfolio. So let's say, you know, let's say you've got a mortgage and you're paying 4% interest on that. And for just to make things really simple, the number's really easy. Let's say it's a $100,000 mortgage, obviously probably more than that, but you're going to be paying $4,000 a year in interest, roughly speaking. You know, again, if you're doing principal and interest, it will be different than that because the mortgage amount will be going down. But again, argument's sake, simple numbers, you're going to be paying around $4,000 a year in interest on that mortgage. Now, if you had $100,000, you've come into some money, you got $100,000, you could pay off that mortgage, and that's going to save you $4,000 a year. You're going to be $4,000 a year better off. The alternative is you could look at potentially investing that $100,000. And if you think you can get more than a 4% return after fees and charges, after tax, then it's going to be better to invest. So that effectively is what it comes down to is, number one, look at the interest rate you're paying on your mortgage. And then number two, look at what you think is an achievable rate of return from an investment perspective. And you basically then just need to compare the two and work out for you, in your circumstances, which is going to be the better option. Now, it's not quite that simple for a couple of reasons. Number one, the money that you save on your mortgage is guaranteed, right? So if you pay off that $100,000, you are guaranteed to save that level of interest. You don't have to worry about anything happening that changes that. You have no debt with the bank. They therefore can't charge you any interest. So you know for certain that you're going to be better off financially the day you make that payment, and you're going to be better off forever by having not pay that interest. When we're talking about an investment portfolio, that's not the case. You know, you could put that $100,000 into an investment portfolio and actually next year it goes down 7%. So you're definitely worse off by having made that investment. Now, what that means is that a couple of things. Number one, you need to have a long enough investment time frame. So you need to be prepared to invest for at least 3 years, preferably five, to ride out those ups and downs. So, you know, if you do negative seven in the first year, you know, the expectation or the hope would be that in subsequent years, at some point, you'll have a really good year. You'll have 14%, 12%, 8%, that's about normal. You know, you'll have a good enough year that offsets those down years. That's how investments work. Broadly speaking, over the long term, you will be rewarded with better long-term returns. But it's not linear. So that's really the main part that you need to understand, obviously, is that the interest rate is a very simple way to compare it. 4% of the mortgage, 6% investments. Investments looks like the best option, but are you comfortable with the level of volatility you're going to experience? And do you have a long enough time frame to be able to put up with that volatility? And then, of course, the other thing is you need to make sure that you are investing in the right way, that you're investing in a reasonable diversified portfolio. You know, if you're taking that 100 grand and throwing that all on Shiba Inu, there's people that have done it, but it could end up really, really badly for you. You know, if you're investing a lump sum of money that you can't afford to lose or that would have a massively negative detriment to your financial circumstances if you lost it, you know, you need to be able to invest in a way that is sensible and a way that is sustainable. So, you know, investing in managed funds, investing in index funds, investing not just in the Australian stock market, but investing in the US market, in the UK market, in European markets, in Asian markets, not necessarily even just investing in stock markets, you know, investing in infrastructure investments like bridges and toll roads, investing in property-based investments, commercial property funds. Spreading your money, spreading your risk isn't going to reduce, or it is going to reduce. It's not going to eliminate the volatility, but it's going to eliminate the risk of your money going to zero. So it's really important that you've got a long enough time frame to invest, that you are comfortable with the levels of volatility that you experience, and that you're investing in a diversified way so that your money can't go to zero. Now, it's not quite that simple. It doesn't quite stop there either, because you know, it's very easy to look at the, like I said before, 4% mortgage rate, 6% investment rate, bing bang, let's go, let's invest, let's smash it in there. We're going to be 2% margin. We're going to be 2% better off every year. That's amazing. There are a couple of things you need to keep in mind. Number one, obviously there's fees. So regardless of the way you invest, there are some ways to invest in that have very low fees. There are some ways to invest that have very high fees. There are some in the middle. There's always going to be a fee of some type to invest. Now, that might be a buy-sell cost, like if you're buying direct equities. That could be transaction costs. But then again, you're going to get enough diversification investing that way. It could be ongoing management charges if you're using mutual funds, managed funds. Whether they are actively managed or index funds, passive funds, you know, there will be a charge. You need to take that off the return. So, you know, if you're only getting 4%, or if you're saving 4% on the mortgage, you're getting 6% on the investment, but that's before fees. All right, what are your fees? If they're 0.5%, knock that off. If they're 1%, knock that off. All of a sudden, the gap is getting a bit smaller. We're looking at 4% to 5.5% or 5%. And the next area you need to take off is tax, right? So if you are investing in your own name, you've got the money in investment fund, you will probably, if you're working, you'll probably pay tax. So again, you need to work out, okay, what's the tax rate going to be? What component of that level of return is likely to be in form of income? You know, how much capital gains is made each year? What is the overall return of this? How is that going to impact my tax position? And, you know, again, that might, you might work out the average tax rate is 20%. So that's going to knock off another 1%-ish of your return. All of a sudden, that gap is gone from being 2.5% worthwhile to 4% mortgage, 4.5% investment returns. And that's not guaranteed. Some years will be less than that. Some years will be a bit more than that. Is that worth doing? Again, that's no right or wrong answer. It comes down to what you're looking for. Now, there's a wide range of level of risk you could take. You know, if you're prepared to take quite a lot of risk, invest a lot of the money in the stock market, that gap's going to be wide, right? You could get 8, 9, 10% long-term average from the stock market. So, you know, you've got a wider gap to play with. If you're not prepared to put up with much volatility, then that gap's going to be narrower and that decision is going to be more tough. Now, you know, again, there are ways to get around this. Superannuation is a big one. So obviously, you know, you're going to be paying a reduced rate of tax for money that's invested in superannuation, but depending on your age, you're giving up a lot for that as well. You're putting that money away for a very long time. If you're young, if you're 20s or 30s, you're not going to see that money for a long time. If you're in your 50s or 60s, probably not as much of an issue. But these are all things that you need to weigh up when you're working out your gross return, your net return, and the access to the funds. The issue can get quite complicated, but broadly, the very nuts and bolts of the issue is a dollar saved is a dollar earned. What interest are you paying on the mortgage, and what net return do you think you can get from an investment portfolio? Right, guys, that is the episode for today. Thank you for tuning in to the very first episode of the Investing Australia podcast. I hope that's been worthwhile. I'd be really keen to get your thoughts. I'd be really keen to know what questions you have about your financial circumstances. And if you've got questions, you can get in touch with me. You can email the show at investingaustraliapodcast@outlook.com. That is investingaustraliapodcast@outlook.com. If you enjoyed this show, if you'd like me to be motivated, if you want me to keep doing more of these, if it's going to give you some value, then give me a ranking, give me a rating. Drop me 5 stars in the Apple iTunes store, Apple Podcast store. Drop a couple words about what you enjoyed about the show. I would really appreciate that. That would be really useful to me. If you have feedback, if you have questions, get in touch with me at that email address. I'd be really keen to hear from you because I want to get to the point where a lot of the questions, or a lot of the content rather, on this show is answering your guys' questions. You know, that if you have a question, it's almost guaranteed that somebody else out there will have the same question. And so that will provide a lot of value, a lot of content to everybody listening to the show. This is going to be coming at you every week. So I really appreciate you tuning in, listening to the end of this, and I look forward to chatting to you next week.